Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Yesterday, I had contacted First Selectman Mike Tetreault's office because I had read an article that Fairfield was working very hard to try and improve the way that we respond to storms. As a lot of you know, we've had in our headlines that we've lost two people so far in these storms, a father earlier this year in the summertime, and then we lost a 21-year-old Sacred Heart University student, both in Fairfield. We learned also from local police that there was a pregnant woman and her husband who also were in another incident like this, but they are okay. But they too were trapped under a tree that had fallen during one of these storms. And now this morning, we have a fourth incident where somebody, a man, was driving along Crestwood Road, and another incident where fallen trees and wires trapped him in his car. Now, he is okay this morning, we're glad to report, but I think the timing couldn't be better. We have First Selectman Mike Tetreault joining us now from Fairfield. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good morning, Melissa, and thank you for giving me a chance to get on the radio here and talk about what we're doing in Fairfield.
Yeah, so, I mean, we absolutely have to dive into this because, as you know, Mike, I grew up in Fairfield. My family still lives there. My parents still Fairfield residents. In fact, I just ran into you and your wife at a benefit a few months ago. So, you know, I love Fairfield. I don't honestly remember this kind of stuff happening so often. Does Fairfield have just like a black cloud over it? I mean, why do I feel like I'm hearing Fairfield a lot in the headlines and it's people getting trapped in their cars from tree limbs falling?
All right, well, we don't have a black cloud over any more than anybody else does, but let's take a look at this. You and I both grew up here in Fairfield. This is different weather than we've ever experienced before. The storms are coming in with smaller, more intense cells. You can be a few blocks away and just have a rainstorm, somebody else could be having a very intense lightning strike. We had one storm, we had 8 houses hit by lightning, which is just unbelievable. And as you pointed out, we've had 4 trees come down in the last 30 days that hit cars with people in them, including last night. We are working with UI, police, fire, our public works, and UI have started meeting already to take a look at what's taking place and look at how we change our approach. One of the big things we looked at is working with UI to specifically when wires are down, because that literally traps somebody in a car. It also prevents police and fire from getting to them. So that creates a potentially a life-threatening situation. Fortunately, last night, everything was okay, and everybody was okay. However, we need to plan for the worst. And we're working with you to say, okay, how do we improve our response time? How do we improve getting the power out so we can get to the people and make sure that we give them the proper aid in this? And last night, just to be clear, UI was on the scene in 10 minutes. So that shows that we've already affected response times, but we need to do better.
Absolutely. I know that was something that was brought up in a lot of the reports, that the response time for the last tragedy we had was a little bit slower, to say the least, but we were confirmed by police that it really wouldn't have mattered in that instance, it sounded like, unfortunately, the 21-year-old passed away very quickly. But you're right, to see that the response time yesterday, it was certainly a lot better than what we saw, already a very quick improvement. However, I will say, as you mentioned UI, I know in the past we have heard from company reps who have said, I've heard this right from their mouth, that Fairfield is one of the worst towns when it comes to trees. Do you feel we have a tree problem? I mean, should we be removing more trees? Like, has that been suggested before by emergency responders?
Well, let's not from emergency responders, but let's take a look at this. Fairfield is 30 square miles. That makes us bigger than most towns, except for a Newtown or a Greenwich. We're primarily residential, so unlike cities like Bridgeport or New Haven, or even Shelton, we have a lot more trees along our roads than they would there. And we have 60,000 people. We're the 11th biggest town in the state. So that means we have the potential for, with more people and more trees and 270 miles of roads, that's just a lot more opportunity within this. So on top of that, these different kinds of storms are coming through where they're very intense in one area. You know, you go back a few weeks, there was a storm that came through that knocked 5 telephone poles down on Old Post right side of Old Town Hall. It took us 48 hours to get power back and functioning in Town Hall, even though we had emergency generators for some of that. It took almost a week of repairs to all those lines by UI before that was back up and running. And yet, I lived two or three blocks away from there, and all we had was a really bad rainstorm. So the intensity of these cells is just changing the way we have to react to storms, and we're changing our whole approach because of that.
So what are some of those things that we're changing for the approach? Because like you mentioned, you're right. Fairfield has, I know, it's one of the towns I know just from growing up here. It's got so many different sections. I know for myself, we're on my family's on the Easton line, which is completely different than being on Black Rock Turnpike, which is completely different than being by Penfield Beach. You know, and then it's completely different than Greenfield Hill. There's so many sections of it. So that's understandable what you were saying. But what I guess what is being done, because it sounds like a lot of these instances are in neighborhoods where it does sound like maybe it would be as simple as going in and eliminating either tree limbs or so. I don't know. I mean, granted, I don't know anything about removing trees and things like that. I'm just wondering. It's very frightening to hear this keep happening, you know?
I think that the challenge is this. There are 270 miles of roads. There's a lot of, and Fairfield's known for its tree-lined streets. If you drive down roads on a sunny day, many of our roads are very shaded because of all the trees and the leaves on the trees, that type of thing. We have an ongoing program with UI about clearing trees away from their power lines. Most of those run along roads, so that's kind of helping with that. In addition, we are working with UI and our police and fire to say, look, when this happens, I think we've had more trees on cars with people in them in the last 30 days than we've had in the last 10 years. So it's a, be it luck of the draw, be it Murphy's Law, however you want to phrase it, the probabilities are coming home to roost right now. So we're talking with UI about normally UI is worried about restoring power. That's it. We have 10,000 people out. Let's get the power back on. That's what happened in Sandy, Irene, and a number of our other storms. However, now we're saying in those instances, we didn't have trees falling on cars with people. And so we need another code, another response to make sure that when there's a life-threatening emergency where we need to get first responders to somebody in a car with trees and wires, that we get UI in a much different response time, a different response mode, if you will, so that we work together on making sure we get first aid to the person in need as soon as possible. So we've already talked about how we do that, how they stage their equipment in different places. And the challenge is, like last night, you can look on a map and realize that certain storm cells came through, but a lot of neighborhoods weren't really impacted greatly by the storm last night. Obviously, Crestwood being an exception.
Right, so like you said, yeah.
We can't stage equipment everywhere.
Right.
But we need a quicker response time. We can't keep it in Orange or New Haven, wherever the main staging area is. So we're working with them on that. We're also working with them on having a different code so they understand if there is a life at risk.
We have First Selectman Mike Tetro with Fairfield on the line with us this morning. And of course, we're talking about storm safety because once again, we had another summer storm roll through yesterday and Fairfield just went through its fourth driver getting caught with downed trees, downed wires. And one of the things that Mike, you're saying is you're working very closely with UI trying to see how response time can be. I know we kind of addressed downed trees and things like that. Do you feel that that is something that the town will look into, though? Do you think the possibility of maybe doing an overhaul of trees would be a good idea, or do you think that's kind of a waste of time?
Oh, that's been ongoing. We've been looking at that all the way through. We've got two major initiatives going on now. One is working with UI because they have an initiative to clear around power lines. But in addition to that, we have our tree warden looking at the roads on a continuous basis. But certainly now one of the things that's happened also is that the ash trees have been dying out, and we've got quite a few of those in Fairfield. And so we're going to adopt a very aggressive plan of getting rid of those trees and getting those cut down so they don't aren't a potential threat to anyone going forward. So this has really changed the way we look at things. We've had an ongoing program over the years, but we definitely have to step that up given what's taking place with the storms.
And we know that the police are helping out with this effort as well. Do you know what the Fairfield Police Department, what they're kind of working on when it comes to sort of dealing with improvements when it comes to storms and in the aftermath of them?
Oh, police, fire, public works, and UI, we're all working together on this because it takes a unified response and what's taking place. One of the things we're doing as part of this is to make sure that, say, when UI is trying to get from our town border to an incident, that we have a police escort to make sure we're doing everything we can to get them to the incident as quickly as possible. So it's a very much a coordinated effort to make sure we're all responding as fast as possible, especially when it's a life-threatening incident.
And we saw that happen yesterday, actually, in that incident. We heard from Sergeant Michael Paris. He said that there was an officer who escorted UI off the highway and right to where the incident was. So we are starting to see some of those things into effect. I mean, you are one of the biggest leaders in Fairfield. Of course, a lot of people look to you, Mike, obviously. From your perspective, you know, what is, I guess, your response to the families who feel something more should have been done when you have, like I mentioned, with the victims we've already seen, a father, we've seen a young graduate of Sacred Heart University, a pregnant woman and her husband in the car, now another man. I mean, to the families or to the people who are listening to these incidences happening or going through these losses, I mean, what, I guess, would you say to the families and loved ones of the people going through this or who have gone through this, unfortunately?
Oh, these are real tragedies, and all of our hearts go out to the families and their loss. And the challenge is, and let's take a look at the incident on Park Avenue. Lightning hit a tree, which doesn't happen all that often. The tree that was hit by lightning then fell on a car on Park Avenue, and injured the driver as part of that. That is the odds or probability of that is hard to do now. We are looking at making sure that we continually survey and identify trees that we can see as a problem. But if lightning is going to hit a healthy tree, it's hard to identify that. And so that's one of the challenges. Certainly you've seen what the state has done on the merit, which is go back and do a lot of clear cutting to eliminate any trees that might potentially fall in the merit at some point. The challenge in town certainly is that the town right-of-way goes in 10 or 15 feet on some roads, but trees are much taller than that, and many of the trees are on private property.
Just out of curiosity, Mike, only because I don't have all the cases in front of me, but were the other incidences, were those incidences where lightning struck a tree and that's how they fell?
On the one on Sturgis Highway, I don't believe so.
Okay.
On the one on Jefferson Street, I am not sure. The one last night, I don't believe so, but it was. I'm still getting reports on that. But that was also a branch that fell, not a full tree.
Okay.
And that was a branch that fell from a tree on private property onto the road.
Okay. The only reason I was asking was only because, like you mentioned, it's a very rare thing to happen, but four times in a summer certainly is, as you mentioned, it's four too many times that have happened here in Fairfield.
And that's more than's happened in the last decade.
Exactly.
It's different weather, different impact, and we have to change how we approach things for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike Tetro, we so appreciate having you on the line. This is our first selectman here in Fairfield, and we appreciate that you guys are working on this. It sounds like there are a lot of things that have already been put into effect since the last tragedy we had, and that went very successfully last night. But obviously, as you mentioned, still a lot of work to be done. Thank you so much for taking the time to explain this all to us this morning.
No, thank you for the opportunity.
2 minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
All right, we are so happy. On Thursdays, we always get to talk to Senator Richard Blumenthal, who joins us on the line. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning. I'm so happy to be with you and hope you and your listeners are fine, too.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, we're excited to have you on the line. We have a couple of big stories we'd like to talk about. One of our top stories yesterday, we know that you were actually one of the people who spearheaded this warning to people. The PFAs that were in the bottled water coming from Massachusetts down to Connecticut. First of all, how did that come about? How did we track that?
The New Hampshire Department of Public Health first alerted the Massachusetts public health officials, who issued a warning about PFAS, that's polyfluorinated chemicals that can cause all kinds of problems, cancer, heart disease, kidney malfunction, and hormone disruption. These kinds of chemicals, if they are at certain levels, can really be dangerous. And the problem is, these levels in the bottled water sold commonly in Massachusetts stores, and now we find Connecticut stores, are way in excess of the advisory levels. But the FDA has never set standards. So I have called on the FDA to set mandatory standards, health standards, that would be applicable throughout the country. And these bottled water supplies are sold in all kinds of supermarkets, but the company that makes the bottled water, or the source of it, which is a farm in Massachusetts, has now applied a charcoal filter. So you can see steps can be taken to make the water safer. Standards are necessary. We learned about it from Massachusetts, but Connecticut ought to be taking action along with the FDA.
Yeah, because honestly, I think that's one of those topics that kind of gets overlooked sometimes. We hear about it in national news. I know it was PFOAs that were tracked in New York, and I think Vermont. We, of course, have heard about this in other states happening, never really in Connecticut. But I think what you're kind of saying, if I'm listening correctly, is that we need to really be proactive versus reactive instead of waiting for these issues to come about. Unfortunately, they're sort of inevitable, right?
Inevitably, there will be some contaminants in water, even in bottled water, but you're absolutely right. We can take action on our own. This water was judged to be dangerous for pregnant women, nursing moms, and infants, so they are the most vulnerable. The water levels were at about 120 to 130 parts per trillion of PFAS, as opposed to the standard of 70. So you can see it's in excess of the allowable amount. But people on their own can take action. Connecticut should take action as well, which we can do, at least to issue warnings and spread awareness under the law. But the FDA's Food and Drug Administration has the ultimate responsibility nationally.
And speaking of calling on the FDA, we are speaking with Senator Richard Blumenthal. You're also calling on the FDA, as I recall, to crack down on Juul, which is interesting because one of the other headlines that we had been following this week was the fact that a Fairfield County man recently sued the electronic cigarette giant for basically, he says that using that product actually led him to have a massive stroke, and he sort of became addicted when he was in high school, which over and over, Senator, we've heard about the fact that these companies kind of are gearing towards teenagers, younger people, with the flavors, the colors, everything, and they seem to be sort of that target. So what are you calling on the FDA to do at this point?
The FDA ought to be banning these flavors, which attract young people. There's an epidemic. That's the word that the FDA commissioner has used to describe it, an epidemic of teenage use of Juuling. It's in the schools, on playgrounds, and it is, in fact, teenagers and sub-teenagers who are attracted to the flavors, the colors, the urge to be cool, all the same attractions that drew young people and still do to smoking. And a lot of people say, well, it's a good way to quit smoking because it's not tobacco. It has nicotine, so it satisfies that addiction. And it is an addiction to nicotine that is caused by both cigarettes and Juuling. But the lawsuit that you mentioned illustrates the potential dangers of Juuling, not only in creating and fostering and deepening that addiction and eventually leading people to start smoking cigarettes, but also the other ingredients that may be in these products. We don't really know what they are, all of them. There's no list of them on the label, and a lot of the products come from China, and we have no idea what's in them.
Yeah, Senator Blumenthal, I think the last thing, just before I let you go really quickly, we know there was a Senate investigation into the sexual abuse case involving Larry Nassar, the former USA gymnastics team doctor. I just know from working in news for a long time, we covered this case extensively. Of course, every other news outlet as well. What came out of that investigation?
This investigation was done by my subcommittee, Senator Moran, a Republican of Kansas, and I, obviously a Democrat, head this subcommittee, and our investigation showed a real culture a massive culture of, in effect, enabling Larry Nassar, but also a long list of other predators who are out there involving other sports like figure skating, swimming, wrestling, and other enablers. So we have made specific proposals in legislation, not only to change the culture, but hold accountable the U.S. Olympic Committee and the governing boards like USA Gymnastics, which was really rotten to the core. These young athletes were real profiles in courage. The enablers were profiles in cowardice, and we have referred for criminal prosecution, one of the main ones, and another is under investigation and prosecution. So it's a combined reaction or agenda of action for new legislation and potential criminal prosecution.
Senator, we so appreciate you giving us this insight this morning. That's Senator Richard Blumenthal. Of course, every Thursday we get to speak with him right around this time. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Great. Talk to you then. Thank you.
Earlier this week, during Today in History, you may remember we touched on the festival that happened but never really happened, the biggest in the country. It happened right here in Connecticut, the Powder Ridge Festival of 1970. I was looking to connect with someone about it, which led me to an even cooler discovery. We have Sean Hayes, who's the president and CEO of Powder Ridge Park. Sean, how are you?
I am excellent. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much for being with us today. So first of all, I wasn't around for that festival. Can you give us a little bit of context? What happened? How did that go down?
Well, I was only five, so I wasn't here myself. But as we understand, is the history shows that it was a festival a year after Woodstock, and they had all the major acts lined up. Chuck Berry, the list goes on, headliner of Janis Joplin. So everyone that was somebody then was coming to Powder Ridge. They had pre-sold, a promotion company out of New York, 60,000 tickets. And when the town of Middlefield heard how far Woodstock got out of control, they shut it down only a week before the event. But we didn't have the internet then. So no one could get notified that their tickets were no longer valid, and none of the artists showed up because they were warned they would be arrested. So it became the largest festival that never happened because 30,000 kids still showed up on the mountain.
With
no artists, no power, no lavatories. It was chaos for 3 to 4 days.
That's wild. And you wouldn't expect it in Connecticut.
No, but there was one shining light. Look, they had fun. They enjoyed themselves on the mountain. And one artist did show up, and her name was Melanie. With no power, two Mr. Frosty trucks, she tied into the speakers out of the Mr. Frosty trucks and played to the crowd.
I did not know that. That's really cool.
It is very cool.
Well, that's kind of a wild thing. Thank you for touching on that because I was looking desperately to talk to somebody. This sounds like something that I would have done in college. It sounds like a blast, but obviously it certainly, you know, like you said, it was the festival that happened but didn't happen. I think it's just one of the coolest things you wouldn't expect in the middle of Connecticut. I think it's hilarious. Sean, of course, the president and CEO of Powder Ridge Park, this kind of actually springboarded, if you will, if that's even a term, kind of landing on some other news that I thought was very cool. I wanted to share with our listeners the fact that Powder Ridge is coming up on its 50th year anniversary next year, and you guys are celebrating with a festival that is happening. Very much is happening.
We are. It's the 50th anniversary of the festival that never happened. So next year, July 31st, same weekend. It happens to be the same date, the same weekend, the original festival that never happened. And we're trying to bring headliners in that represent all of those great bands of the 1970s to come to a more family-oriented festival on the mountain. It will be a 3-day event starting Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday with music, entertainment, mountain activities for the entire family all weekend long.
So I know it's a year out. You guys are working obviously very hard on that, but hey, we've got you on the line. Any little secrets, any tidbits? Who are you trying to get to come?
We are actually in discussion with Melanie, the only artist that played at the original festival.
No way.
Yes. Yes, she is still out there. She's still singing. She is still entertaining people. So we are trying to get her, but we can't make promises yet. But that's just one of the activities and artists that we are bringing in to make the weekend a success. And we are also, which have now become collector items, for the first 100 people with the original festival tickets that were no longer honored back in the 70s, we will take them in exchange for the festival next year.
Oh, that is so fun. This is like a blast from the past. This is so cool. Why wasn't I alive? That's awesome.
It's funny. My uncle was actually one of those kids that came out here for the entire weekend and hiked it in because the National Guard was actually called in to shut down the town. Again, we are not trying to duplicate what happened in 1970. This is a fun activity for the whole family all weekend long, and we will not have 60,000 people on the mountain.
All right, Sean. Well, I appreciate that heads up. What a cool way to kind of bring this all together. I think it's so neat. 50 years later, crazy to even think that we're almost 50 years from that festival. And what a beautiful way to bring it all together round circle. I love it. Sean Hayes, the CEO and president of Powder Ridge Park. We're excited about this. Of course, we'd love to get back in touch with you maybe around this time next year, maybe a little bit beforehand, so we could see what the festival is looking like and we can give people some details and make sure you have a great turnout. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear from you again. People can check us out on our website, powderridgepark.com, and we will keep the website updated as we get more and more artists signed up.
Yeah, and it was just so cool to be able to connect with, again, that was Sean Hayes, the president and CEO of Powder Ridge Park. Again, that website is up. It is powderridgepark.com. You can learn more about the festival, which is going to be a year from today. Pretty cool stuff. Didn't even know they were doing one of those. Very nice.
It's 9:30. You know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
And we have Luke Frey here from the Better Business Bureau. Good morning, Luke. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much. I'm glad that I'm connecting with you about this. I don't know if you heard earlier in the show, we do a Facebook post every single day where everybody gets to weigh in, our listeners weigh in, and we read their comments. And today happened to have been, okay, it's August 1st. We're down to the last month of summer. What is everyone doing? And a lot of people are going out of town, which is great. They're going to go on last minute beach trips or go to Maine or the Outer Banks, you know, whatever it may be. And I, of course, came across your email of vacation rentals. Now, the other half of our audience are also sending their kids back to college. And immediately I thought, wow, I couldn't talk to Luke on a better day because college rentals are also a big topic this morning. What's going on with scams in both situations?
Yeah, so first off, I can't believe it's August. We have weeks to pack in our last-minute vacations. So as far as vacation rental scams, we're actually seeing an uptick in them. And really, the people who fall victim to them are people now who are saying, oh my gosh, it's August now, I have to go on a trip. Let me book really quickly and find something cheap, find something awesome, and hopefully go for a quick long weekend or whatever. And really, you have to be careful. So there are tons of fake online ads and advertisements for these beautiful vacation homes that may not even be real. So you really have to be careful about what site you're on, who's posting it. If you do use sites like Airbnb, always read the review of the host that owns whatever property you're actually going to. I've actually heard of a lot of people reserving these large homes, you know, planning a trip, buying airfare, and then it's canceled at the last minute. So you definitely don't want that to happen.
I mean, are we talking about there are situations where people have even paid for a rental property? Because I think of Airbnb off the top of my head. You have to pay ahead of time, and they show up, and either the house doesn't exist or it's already, you know, used or something. I mean, what are some, I'm just like worried when you say, you know, you got to check all this stuff ahead of time. Are people showing up and the house isn't even real?
Yeah, so there's a couple different scenarios that can happen. One is a person actually reserves a home, flies there, and then throughout their travel day, they actually get an email from Airbnb saying their reservation was canceled. And if you read reviews, a couple hosts, I mean, obviously, if it's a bad host, there will be a lot of reviews about them canceling your reservation like day of. So you're about to get to that house and you're not able to access it.
That's awful.
Yeah. Yeah, and then also, if you're not using Airbnb, you're trying to use a Craigslist or some other site where you can't really contact the person who owns that property. The positive side of Airbnb is usually if you have an issue, Airbnb will try to take care of that and try to make things right. If you use other sites and you're not really in contact with the owner, it's really hard. So in those instances, it's always best to use your credit card in case anything would happen. Again, I always talk about these weird means of payment, you know, prepaid gift cards, wire transfer. You don't ever want to do that when paying for anything, especially not a rental property.
We are now talking to Luke Frey, who's with the Better Business Bureau. And Luke, we were just talking about vacation rentals and making sure that you're checking reviews, maybe making sure those cancellation policies, if something seems out of whack when it comes to your payments. And I do want to switch gears just slightly. It's still sure. Rentals, but I worry about college students. I remember even in my day when I was in college, having so many friends, they look on Craigslist, they look everywhere. And I can remember specifically a guy who actually works in news with me. He used to work in news. He had moved up to Vermont, where I was living, and he was looking at properties, and they seemed almost too good to be true. I mean, Burlington, Vermont is very expensive. It's one of the only cities in Vermont, and he was seeing properties for like $400 a month downtown.
Oh my gosh.
which is unheard of. I mean, you can't get anywhere downtown for less than $1,200 a month, and it ended up being where, unless we went to show up to these places, they were asking for deposits, and if he didn't pursue, hey, I want to show up and look at this place, we didn't even know he was getting scammed. Unfortunately, a lot of these students are going to do this online before they get to school. Like, my sister goes to school in Utah. She can't look at places ahead of time. So what can we do about scams when it comes to college apartments?
That is hard. And even you can have a college student at home, and it's August, and they're about to go back, and college kids kind of procrastinate sometimes, so they could be like, hey, mom and dad, I don't have a dorm this year, so I have to get an apartment. And you're like, what? You have to go back in 2 weeks. So even if you are rushed, there are a couple things to really keep an eye out for, and one is exactly what you talked about, and it's being pressured to do an application or pay some sort of deposit upon even seeing the unit. So you should always tour it, and again, if you're going to some other state and you can't really get there, that may be hard, and you should probably look into that if it's a rental company, if it's a person you're contacting. Really search online, see if anything comes up, search that landlord name, his email address, her email address, and see if anything comes up, just to make sure you don't fall into a scam. However, if they are asking you to pay again via that wire transfer, prepaid gift card, something kind of weird, you really shouldn't get into that. And then the other point, like you talked about, is if it's a price that's way too good to be true, if it's hundreds, sometimes even thousands of dollars less than it should be, it is probably absolutely a scam.
I mean, in those situations, if you're not dealing with a rental company, both for vacations or for college apartments, I mean, in those situations, once not only did you put that deposit down, but if they do wire your money, not only are you never going to see that money again, but they may also compromise and have your information now.
Yes, yeah. And also talking about companies, too, because in college, I went to Temple in Philly, and there were like two rental companies that really owned all of the apartments in that area. And even if you're dealing with a rental company, that does not mean that they're a great company either. So you still have to do research on that company. Know your rights, you know what you're signing, know what these policies are, so that you know that what you're signing, what you're getting is what you actually want. So a lot of these university towns, you know, certain companies will buy up all these properties and might not run it all that great. So sometimes your best bet is not going through a company and trying to find those mom and pop, you know, half houses or small apartments. But like you were talking about, if you can't get there and you can't tour them, sometimes that can be tricky.
And I do think, last thing before I let you go, Luke, I do think another thing that I think is worth mentioning is the fact that when you start searching, whether you are looking for a college apartment or you're looking for a rental property for vacation, once you start that search, you're going to get one of those search bar things like on the side of your internet, or when, if you're on any kind of website, you'll start to get the suggested, hey, why don't you look at this property, or hey, what about this? Or you were looking at this. I mean, I would think you shouldn't trust those necessarily right away either without really looking into those either.
Yeah, I mean, that's any online ad. So once you search online, if you're trying to buy a pair of shoes, it could be, you know, anything. Ads are going to pop up everywhere. So you have to be careful about where these ads are taking you to, what other sites. And then last point is, if you are trying to find some vacation home, some college apartment, and you keep seeing the same listing, you know, 10, 20, 100 times online, that's usually not ever a good sign either. It's a sign that that scammer is posting it so much and trying to get someone to fall for it that they have to post it a bunch. So if you see the same posting on all of these sites using the same beautiful pictures and the same low price, that's usually not a good sign.
Oh, that's such a good point. I've seen that just myself. I know we were looking, I was just saying in the beginning of the show, my husband and I always go away to Lake Placid, New York, but we were thinking with our toddler, maybe we stay local. Mm-hmm. And we originally were looking to go up to Old Lyme, which we love. And there was the same beach house that kept popping up on every site we looked at. And we kept thinking, wow, maybe this is like really, maybe this is a sign from God that we should be. And then I thought, well, no, maybe this is not what we should be doing.
Is it a sign from God or is it a scam?
Exactly.
Sometimes it's a fine line, right?
It really is. It really is. Luke Frey, if not for you, that fine line would just get blurrier and blurrier. Thank you so much. I don't know if you noticed, if you checked your calendar, rip off that July page because it is August 1st. Holy moly, we're already in the last month of summer. And what are your plans? I know in our house, we've got one of my sisters who started her clinicals this week for, she's a physical therapist in the making. And my other sister is dreading the fact that she's going to start packing her bags because she's going back to school in Utah in a couple of weeks. So it kind of made me think, how is time going by so fast? What are you doing? And I got a lot of responses on Facebook. Some of my favorites, though, and might I add, I'm going to share your answers from Facebook on the air right now. But I'm hoping after, you know, I read your answers, maybe some of you will offer to bring me along on some of your adventures, because I know for myself, I don't have a ton of plans. I know I'm going to be here. I'm going to be here fighting a head cold. That's what I'm doing. But Patricia Sweeney says, I, for the rest of my summer, plan on going to do some shopping in Old Montreal. That's exciting. She's going to be with her daughter and her daughter-in-law. So, Patricia, if you want to swing down to Connecticut and then swing back up, I don't know why you would do that, and then go up to Montreal, you just let me know. I love Canada. Used to live only 45 minutes from the border, so you just let me know. Claudia says, we'll be packing, enjoying some family time, and then flying to Utah. Also, last minute shopping. Yes, Claudia, my mother, you know, the Utah thing kind of gave it away. She is a superwoman, let me tell you, because she not only gets my sister now up at 5:30 to do her clinicals, but then has to get the other sister off and running to Utah and get her settled in at school. So it's a constant moving, a crazy network in the Sheck house. But yeah, we'll probably get that last minute shopping. I'm sure I'm going to be in on that one, so I'll be there. Alyssa says she's heading to the OBX, North Carolina, for a week with friends, 8 adults with 8 children. We do a yearly beach vacation, and this is the first time we managed to get a house right on the beach. Can't wait. So Alyssa, we actually went to OBX for the very first time, the whole Sheck clan. There was 12 of us. Yes, there are 12 Shecks. And we went to the OBX, the Outer Banks, and it was so fun. Because what's great is about these beach vacations. So we, for years, we would go to either Disney World or we'd go to the Atlantis in the Bahamas, because my younger brother could only handle certain places. And those were the only two entertaining places he wanted to go. So every once in a while, we would do these family trips and we went to the same two places. Now, they were very fun, but they were filled with activities and things we had to do every day. So it was very rare that we got to just wake up when we wanted, kind of relax. If you walked in a room, you knew that the whole family would be there. That didn't really happen too often on these big, luxurious kind of vacations. The OBX, I find to be just like any other great, I would say, any other great beach vacation, is that you get to just be around family. And where are you going to go? You're either going to go to the beach or the pool, or you're just going to sit inside. And that's like basically it. I have found, as I've become an adult, vacation is so much better. If you're not going to do a staycation, it is so much better to just relax and just be stuck in a house on the beach or something, or a lake or something like that. I think that is just the way to go. So, Alyssa, if you would like to add a couple more people to your trip, you just let me know. I would be honored to go back to the OBX. And it sounds like you're right on the beach, which is, that sounds amazing. So let me know. And then Mark Owl Campbell says, I try to get myself to Maine and soak up a little bit of sun for a couple of days before things start to chill down. All right, well, Mark, hopefully things don't chill down too soon. I mean, I'm hoping the heat at least kind of hangs out for a little bit. We still tend to have, you know, at least longer summers and even falls here in Connecticut. I know living in Vermont for, gosh, the last 10 years, our winter started in the end of October and it lasted until the end of April. So I'm excited to finally have a Connecticut summer that actually lasts until about September, a fall that actually goes until almost Christmas time. I'm excited for that. I'm pumped. So no chill downs, but hey, Maine, beautiful. We were there in the spring and it was gorgeous. So I loved it. And if you want to take me along, like I said, any of you sound like you're going on great trips. So if you are looking to, you know, get me off the air and bring me on a trip with you, I very much oblige. I just need to make sure that's okay with my bosses, probably Tony, which I'll ask him when he comes back from vacation.